Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
On today's podcast, it's nearly a month into 2024, so now it feels like it's time to tell you my favourite films of 2023. My name is Justin Hamilton, and I eventually get around to things here on Big Squid. Yes, it is the podcast that I have been promising for a while, and we are eventually making it happen. I don't know why we're saying we. It's me. I'm making it happen. I do all of this. I'm making this happen on this Easter Saturday, and yes, I am working all weekend to try and catch up on stuff, and this has been a number one priority to finally get around to what were my favourite films of 2023. Need to stress, these I'm not into best ofs, I'm just saying favourites. These are just movies that I enjoyed the most, and therefore, I'm not saying if you enjoyed something more than I did, that doesn't mean one is better than the other. It is literally all about taste and what I connected with and kind of stuck with me as well. I think they're the main ingredients that I was looking for. What movies stuck with me after I saw them? I saw a lot of films last year. I saw over 100, and it's amazing. There were a few movies that I had to go through my list and think, what the fuck was that? I could not remember for the life of me. And then you look it up and you go, yeah. Okay, well, I can understand why you don't quite remember that. There's a lot of movies that were the first time I'd seen them, and but they don't fit into the category of films that were released in 2023. Now, there'll be a couple of films that you'll be a bit confused by, because you'll say, well, wasn't that released in 2022? But I'm kind of going with movies that were possibly even released right towards the end of December of 2022, but I didn't get to see them in the cinema until 2023. So that's my criteria, and they had to be new films. I saw a whole lot of Wong Kar-wai films. There was a festival? It wasn't quite a festival, but it was a regular Sunday night where they were playing a whole lot of his films, and I'd only seen In the Mood for Love, and I finally managed to catch up on films like As Tears Go By and Days of Being Wild, and it was great. It was great to be able to catch up on these movies. And, you know, there were also films like I'd never seen Barry Lyndon or Lolita. So I caught up on them last year. Lolita is a funny film. Like, It'd be interesting to see how that would be looked at now. But I have to say, I laughed a lot. And deliberately funny as well. Most of the movies that I'm going to be mentioning I saw more than once. That's also a pretty good sign that the movie stuck with me. I think there's only the one that I have only gotten around to the once, and it's the 10th film. So that's kind of interesting. But I will get back to it. I just haven't had time. But you know what, I was going to mention a couple of films that were just a bit of a bummer, but why do that? Why put us through that? Yeah, no, I'm just not going to do that to you. Let's just talk about the films that I enjoyed. I will talk about my 10 favourites, and I'll do some shout-outs as well for you. So let's kick off with number 10. It is John Wick Chapter 4, and this is the film where John Wick has a price on his head that's increasing by the second, it appears, and he has to fight against the High Table Global as he seeks out the most powerful players in the underworld from New York to Paris to Japan to Berlin. That is the summation. And essentially it is just, you know, you've seen the John Wick films, haven't you? It's a lot of action, and it's him just kicking ass, you know, and he's exacting revenge against the High Table, as we mentioned. He's traveling all over the world. He's coming into contact with a broad range of characters, some beautifully acted characters as well. Lawrence Fishburne hasn't been this much fun in a long time. The last time that we got to see Lance Reddick, I think it's the last time. It's the last time I've seen him. That was kind of a sad moment in the film. And Ian McShane, as always, is fantastic. And Hiroyuki Sanada, who I'm really enjoying in Shogun. If you're not watching that at the moment, that's a TV series on Showcase. He's fantastic as well. Look, this is a film that doesn't really have a lot to talk about other than it's kind of like watching a Fred Astaire dance film, except, you know, it's murder. As I get older, I'm not really into gun violence. I'm not really into real violence, but everything in this is so meticulously and beautifully choreographed that I just kind of enjoy that aspect of it, I guess. And it feels cartoonish. Gun violence is obviously a real problem in the real world, and you know, who knows if films like this cause more trouble than we realise. But, you know, that's a discussion for another time. I'm just talking about films I went and saw at the cinema and had a good experience. The cinema erupted into applause when he starts using that goddamn sparkle gun or whatever it is, and it suddenly looks like you're looking down on a video game. Everyone started clapping. Also, another highlight in the cinema was the rolling down the stairs montage. And, you know, I'll just speak, you know, obliquely about that, because if you haven't seen it, it's so funny. And you really don't want to have it ruined. But Keanu Reeves is great. He's starting to, Keanu's starting to get a little bit up there, isn't he? He's starting to slow down a little bit. But that's kind of what's fun about John Wick. He's, on the one hand, I don't know, indestructible. But on the other hand, he's got a little bit of the Indiana Jones about him. He gets hurt. There's a lot of ouchie going on. So, you know, if he's slowing down a little bit, I'm kind of fine with that, because, you know, John Wick gets hurt a lot. He just gets heard a lot. So anyway, that I've only seen it the once. I had a really good time in the cinema. I'll get around to watching it again. I might even, you know, at some point, you know, give myself a weekend. Maybe not this one, but maybe the next long weekend. Maybe I'll do all four, one each day. That would be a fun thing to do as well. Oh yeah, Donnie Yen, Bill Skarsgård, Clancy Brown, so many great actors in this. And it was Rina Sawayama, all great. I just had a good time. So John Wick, Chapter 4, coming in at number 10. All right, number 9. Now this will probably be... I think some of you will think that I'm insane for saying this, but... anyway, coming in at number 9, actually, this is the only other film I've seen once, and I saw this at the cinema, and it had such bad reviews, and everyone shit on it, and my friend and I went along, and where I was sitting, I was just above the entrance, so I could see people leaving, and I watched as 4 different couples, 8 people, in case you're not very good with maths, leave the movie while this was on. So coming in at number 9 for me is Babylon, which is a film that covers the rise and fall of multiple people in the movie industry, which is around the time that it is transitioning from the silent era to talkies. And... it was directed and written by Damien Chazelle. It stars Brad Pitt, Margot Robbie, and Gene Smith, amongst other people. Diego Calva, Phoebe Tonkin, Australia's Own. Samara Weaving, Australia's Own. Tobey Maguire. And I don't know. Like, I just really enjoyed this. I thought this was a really fun film. And I think it's a big swing. Like, I totally get that. It is a massive swing. And there are big set pieces, and it's a decadent time in the movie industry. So, therefore, it's a decadent film. And I don't really understand why people weren't enjoying it. Now, like, I know it's over 3 hours. Like, 3 hours is a long film. You know my theory. A movie should be as long as it has to be. I've been bored in 90-minute films, so, you know, three-hour films. Maybe this film could have been pared back by 50 minutes. 50 minutes, sorry, about half an hour. Could have been a 2.5-hour film, you know, and maybe the decadence was too much. But I found it really interesting. I find that era interesting. I thought Brad Pitt was fantastic. I thought Margot Robbie was fantastic. I actually found her quite heartbreaking. I felt some of the set pieces, like when they're trying to record with sound for the first time, I found that to be almost Coen-esque in how funny and frustrating it was. And, where it ends up is... I found the ending to be quite beautiful and also poignant. The finale is a big swing, but it is, I don't know, like I admire the ambition, and maybe while it doesn't quite hit every ball out of the park, it cleared the fence enough for me to thoroughly enjoy it and put it in my top 10. I think there's some subtlety to the film as well. I think there's some final moments with characters that are quite sweet and sad. And yeah, I don't know. I just... everyone kind of shit on it. It was a big bomb. Like, it was a movie made for... I don't know, something like 80 million, and I think it barely took 60. But sometimes a narrative just attaches itself to a film, and you can't shake it, you know. So Yeah, it's interesting. I'll be curious to know what people will think when they maybe revisit this film. Will it always be considered a stinker, or will it have a renaissance? We're seeing a renaissance with Tenet. People are suddenly realising that Tenet's a really well-made and fun film. And as I've said to many people, it probably wasn't the movie that everyone wanted coming out of... coming out of that initial lockdown. If they'd probably held it off and brought it out during the real kind of easing up of laws, maybe people would have had more fun with it. But anyway, I thought this film was great. I'll always admire something more that takes a big swing. And also, like, to those four couples, if for some bizarre reason you're listening to this, which I doubt you are, but fuck, you don't want to sit in a cool cinema on a Saturday evening and look at Margot Robbie on the big screen? You don't want to look at Diego Calva? You don't want to look at Brad Pitt? Jesus, like, what's going on in your fucking life? Anyway, fuck those people. Coming in at number 8. Now, this is interesting. This is a film that the first time I saw it didn't really grab me. It's definitely, you got to have a taste for it. And then I re-watched it and it clicked into place for me. Now, the first time I saw it, I was extremely tired. I'd been working all weekend and went to a preview early on a Monday, and I was fatigued, to be honest, and I couldn't quite connect to this film. But the second time I saw it, it all connected. It fell into place, and I really enjoyed it. That movie is Wes Anderson's Asteroid City, where we follow a writer on his world-famous fictional play about a grieving father who travels with his tech-obsessed family to a small, rural asteroid city to compete in a junior stargazing event, only to have his world disrupted forever. Wes Anderson, I totally get, is a flavour that you may not be into. And, there's nothing you can do about that. He makes specific types of films, and if you're not into his aesthetic, which is completely fair enough, then you're just not going to enjoy his movies. Lots of people love to... people who listen to this podcast like to give things a go that they're not into, and I really admire that. But this is not the film for you to give Wes Anderson a go if you're not into his films. It's 100% Wes Anderson. If you don't like his films, don't watch this film. There's nothing wrong with that. But this is not going to be the movie that wins you over. It has a crazy cast that includes Jason Schwartzman, Scarlett Johansson, Tom Hanks, Jeffrey Wright, Tilda Swinton, Bryan Cranston, Edward Norton, Adrian Brody, Liev Schreiber, Hope Davis, Stephen Park, Rupert Friend, Maya Hawke, Steve Carell, Matt Dillon, Hong Chau, Willem Dafoe, Margot Robbie. Yes, Margot Robbie turns up 3 times in my top 10 films of this year. That's interesting. I've only just realised that myself. I wonder what the other film could be. There's something that really appeals to me about this. There's a retro futuristic vibe to it. There's the television host who's introducing the documentary about the creation and production of Asteroid City, which is a play by the playwright Conrad Earp, and the play's events are depicted on widescreen while the television stuff is seen in black and white. And I just kind of found this movie to be, once again, quite poignant. It kind of has a pathos to it, and there's a loneliness, but it explores these ideas, but it just kind of moves along at a nice little pace, and it's, I don't know, I completely understand where people might find this to be self-indulgent, but You know, maybe, you know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, maybe it's a movie only for Wes Anderson fans. I remember there were some young comedians who went and saw the film. I was performing with them for the week, and then I saw them the next day, and they hated the film. But then again, I didn't like their stand-up, so that shows you where we probably are both at in what we want from our entertainment. That was kind of childish of me, but also a fact. Anyway, I just, you know, it also took me two goes to get into this, and it was, you know, I was tired. So, you know, if you're going to give it a go, give it a go when you are definitely wide awake. But as I said, if you're not a fan or a fair weather fan of Wes Anderson, this is not the film for you. But it was for me. It came in at number 8. Number 7, we get to a film that, wow, won an Oscar for Best Special Effects, and I think it thoroughly deserved them. It was Godzilla Minus One. And what a film. What an absolute film. It is a beautiful telling of the Godzilla story. I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily a Godzilla fan or not a Godzilla fan. I'm neither here nor there. I've seen some that I've enjoyed. I've seen some that I can't remember. But this is set in 1945, near the end of World War II, and it's we follow a kamikaze pilot who lands his plane at a Japanese base on Odo Island, and it turns out that this pilot has fled from his duty by feigning technical issues. And then that night, Godzilla attacks, and our main character, Shikishima, freezes and cannot bring himself to shoot the monster from his plane and is knocked unconscious. And then the only other survivor of this attack blames him for failing to act. So then you kind of follow this character, and it's all about survivor's guilt. And, it's post-World War II. It is an awful time in Japan. Japan, as we know, were, sided with the Nazis in World War II, but I don't know. It's like war is war, and there's also repercussions for ordinary people with these wars that are decided by people, usually men, most normally men in positions of high power. So it is an interesting exploration of what it was like to be living in a post-World War II Japan and how it affected people trying to get their lives back on track now that the war was over. And it is also a Godzilla movie, and it's made for fucking $15 million or something, and it might even be a little bit less, and it looks great. It looks better than every Marvel movie that's been produced in the last couple of years. Somehow Godzilla kind of looks real and rubbery at the same time. I don't know how to describe it, but this film was great. What a winner. I was so rapt to see it win an Oscar for its special effects. And if you haven't seen it, I think it's really worthwhile checking out. The title Minus One is symbolic of where Japan was after World War II. And then, the emergence of Godzilla worsens the country's situation, and it kind of takes it below zero. But I think it's also in some way, a sequel to the original Godzilla. So it's like Godzilla Minus One. Anyway, what a clever film. What a fun film. So that comes in at number 7. Number 6 is a film that I thankfully saw at the cinema twice. And I'm so glad I saw it at the cinema, because if I'd watched it where it was originally released, I reckon I just don't think it would have hit as well as it could have. And this film is David Fincher's The Killer. It stars Michael Fassbender. It was originally, it is a Netflix film, but there was a limited release, and I thought it was great. I thought it was so funny. It is a film about a professional assassin who is just possibly a little bit shit at his job. and it's all kind of told from his perspective, so you get this inner monologue of what he's telling himself and how he talks himself up and how he feels about his job and how cold and cool he is. And if you haven't seen the film, just everything goes slightly awry. And I found this film so funny, but to the extent I was laughing so hard at the Ritz Cinema in Sydney, and I was with a friend, and I had to say, is anyone else laughing? Because I suddenly got really paranoid. And she said, no, you're fine. You're absolutely fine. And there's other people laughing. Because it's not ha-ha jokes. It's situations. It's events. It's the way things happen. It's the way he talks to himself about how he does things this way and that way, and he doesn't do this and he doesn't do that, and the only way to approach things is this kind of professionalism, and this is what he's going to do. And then nothing quite works out the way it's meant to work out. And I think it's a really, really, really funny film, and it also undermines what we want from these films. It has it's kind of building up to an ending that is not what you are expecting or is delivered. Anyway, I just thought this was fantastic. I thought it was really funny. I know people kind of found the character boring, but yes, the character is boring. But you can't just listen to it. You've got to watch it as well. If you're listening and watching, it's really funny. If you're watching, he's a killer. And if you're listening, this guy's fucking up himself and doesn't really have anything interesting to say. But if you contrast the two, it's really funny. Anyway, I put up a blog today about Peggy and Molly, the Staffy and the Magpie, that were friends that have been split up because someone's been keeping an eye on them, and you're not allowed to take wildlife and put them in your house. And I was going to write something on Wednesday, and I thought, I'm too angry about this. And I was going to write something on Thursday, and then I thought, I'm too angry about this. And I was still too angry on Friday, and then I was, oh no, I'm good today, I can write about this. And then and then it's a pretty angry blog. There's a few jokes in there, don't worry. But I think it's spilling over into my frustrations. Okay, number five, Barbie. Yep. Loved it. Saw it twice. Had a really good time. What is there to say? I think it's fantastic that it was the biggest film of the year. I think it's by the way, this is an absolute compliment, but I think this is a perfect film for people who love movies and people who don't love movies. And that it reached out across the aisle and brought everybody in is just great. And what else is there really to say about Barbie, you know, unless you're going to do a proper deep dive? I learned more about the dolls, actually. That was quite...
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fascinating. And, you know, the stories that the film had to tell. I do think the two best parts of the movie for me are the fact that the patriarchy isn't just evil, but it allows idiots to rise to the top. I think part of the most underrated and inspired part of the casting is that the head of Mattel is Will Ferrell playing an idiot, and he plays an idiot so well, and it's great that he is there, because if it was a moustachoid twirling villain, then that kind of defeats the purpose a little bit, you know. But the fact that he's an idiot, that's kind of the point that they're trying to make about these shackles that the patriarchy has on society. Also, the throwaway line by, I don't know who the actor is, he only, I think, gets maybe two or three lines, but that line where the guy says, no, the patriarchy's still around, we're just better at hiding it, I thought was an inspired line as well. But yep, Margot Robbie, fantastic. Three movies in my top 10. She's just great. Ryan Gosling, far out, you know, still basking in the glow of his performance at the Oscars. All of it was great. Greta Gerwig's great. I can't wait for her next film. I think she's doing The Chronicles of Narnia, which is really interesting, isn't it? I think so, because what's fascinating about that is I read those books as a kid, and I really enjoyed them as a kid. But I never quite realised they were a Christian allegory. So as I've gotten older, that's why I much prefer Philip Pullman's work. But it'll be interesting to see what she can do with these films. I don't... it'll be interesting. We'll see what they can do with these films. And I'm just looking it up now, but everything's a little bit more complicated. But, you know, it says here, you know, very much based in Christianity. And I'll be honest, as a card-carrying atheist, that makes me gag. Now, I kind of like... I quite like religious allegory, I guess. But, you know... hopefully it's not pushing some sort of agenda. But anyway, I have heaps of faith in Greta Gerwig. But let's not worry about the future. We're talking about the past. And the past is 2023, and Barbie came in at number 5. Number 4, Past Lives. What a beautiful, beautiful film. I loved, loved, loved this. It's a really simple plot. It's about Nora and Hae-sung, two deeply connected childhood friends who are living in South Korea. And then Nora's family emigrates to America. And 20 years later, Hae-sung gets in touch and travels to spend a week with her. And it's all about love. It's about destiny. It's such a beautiful film. It's not what you'd expect either. I think there is a subtlety to how the movie plays out. I think you go in with a set of expectations on how these movies work and how they can be. How they'll play out. But this movie doesn't do that at all. It even has a beginning that kind of throws you
Like, I think it kind of leans into what you think it might be about, and then, or where it might be going, and then it turns out that this is not true at all. I just thought this was beautifully acted. It's pretty much, like, there's other actors in it, but it's a pretty much a three-hander. Greta Lee as Nora Moon, who is just beautiful. T.L. Yu as Hae-sung is wonderful, and John Margaret as Nora's husband is also great, and you just have sadness and affection, and you feel a level of beauty for all of the characters, and I just really loved it, and it should hit you in the feels if you allow yourself to give yourself over to it. You know what I mean? Give yourself over to it, and you will have a beautiful experience. Okay, Past Lives. God, I almost can't even talk about that without feeling a little bit teary. And I've still got one more to talk about as well that makes me teary. But thankfully, in the middle of that, Past Lives number four. Number three, Tar. Yes, I loved Tar. I thought it was magnificent. I think it is one of the funniest films I have seen in a long time, and you know, I think it's great that Michelle Yeoh won an Oscar. I think she's deserving of an Oscar. I think it's important in a broader context. Everything Everywhere All at Once being a big hit was great. I'm into all of that. Personally, it was Cate Blanchett's Oscar. I think she is magnificent in this film. I think it's all the brilliance of Blanchett just playing at such a high level. Blanchett plays Lydia Tarr, who is considered one of the greatest living composer-conductors and the very first female director of a major German orchestra. And she is awful and horrible and funny, and it's a magnificent film. You know, she's achieved everything that someone could ever dream of. She's a trailblazer, and she's preparing the release of her memoir while juggling work and her family. She's about to take on one of the most significant challenges of her life, a live recording of Gustav Mahler's Symphony No. 5. But then her facade begins to crumble. She has dirty secrets. There's a discussion about the insidious, nature of power behind the scenes, and what she's willing to do to hold on to them. Just loved this film. It started in a way that had me on my back foot. I honestly thought when I first saw it at the cinema that they had put the wrong reel on, but it wasn't. It's a definite choice, and it's a good choice, and it makes you it really sets the tone for the film. In many ways, it's funny. Like a Stanley Kubrick film. So if you don't find his films funny, I know a lot of people don't. I know especially the younger generation find him to be pompous and boring. And when you mention that his films are funny, people just look at you as if to say you're insane. But I think he is funny. And I think this film is extremely funny as well. Oh my God, Cate Blanchett. Just there's a couple of scenes that, like, what's fascinating about this film to me is there are times where I think I'm meant to not be on her side, but then she says and does something and you think, I think I'm kind of there for you with that. But then there's other times where you go, oh, yuck, you are awful. You are one of the most awful people. And sometimes those feelings can bounce back and forth between scenes, you know? It's funny. She she's just so good in this. I know some people who aren't fans of Cate Blanchett as well. And, you know, she has a very specific style, but I just think this is her at her best. And I think the finale, the end of the film is honestly, I don't know. Just some of the one of the funniest endings to a movie that I've seen in a long time. Anyway, there were just a whole bunch of films last year or in the year before, you know, or say in the recent 18 months that just haven't really quite landed. And you know, Spielberg's The Fablemans. You know, I actually really enjoyed Guillermo del Toro's Nightmare Alley. I was a big fan of Paul Thomas Anderson's Licorice Pizza, as you know. None of those. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Sometimes movies just don't find their audience. But I love Tar, so I'm putting it in at number three. Number two. This would have been the Past Lives spot, but I guess. But this film is After Sun, starring Paul Mescal and Frankie Corio. It tells the story of young Sophie, who's about 11 years old, who goes on a holiday with her father, Callum. And the movie's kind of told from Sophie's perspective 20 years later. So she's kind of reconciling a time in her life. You know, she's, you know, it's kind of hard to talk about without giving things away, but there's a specific reason that she is now at this point in her life, and she's looking back on who her dad was and what she experienced with him. There's that idea of we always look back and we try to reconcile our true memories and what we imagined, and we try to put these things together to create a narrative, and those narratives influence and inform who we are today. And this is essentially a film about that. And yeah, I just saw this film a couple of times. I've been thoroughly surprised at some people not really understanding the ending. I think the ending is pretty obvious what happens. But once again, I think people take things a little bit literally. I think you have to watch this closely and take in the whole of the film and not just the images that are being shown to you. The little girl is magnificent. Paul Mescal is fantastic. You know, there's nothing new about that. Sad. It's just a sad film. And I guess, you know, depending on your age, I think there are moments where you kind of have to reconcile who you are and what your hopes were and how they now conflict with what your dreams were. You know, Mescal's character is beautiful and at one point a bit of an arsehole, and the little girl, like there was actually a point in the film where I was worried that something might happen with you know, the little girl. And I, you know, like Past Lives, it doesn't go the routes that you expect it to go. So anyway, I loved After Sun. I'm putting it at number two on my list. I reckon any other year, I think After Sun, Tar and Past Lives any other year would have been my number one film. My number one film, let's just get it over and done with. Rip the Band-Aid off. It was Oppenheimer. I loved it. I was, to be honest, I was skeptical about how this movie would do when it was announced after the after the backlash of Tenet. People seem to be very dismissive of Nolan. I thought the subject, I first got introduced to the idea of Oppenheimer through, of all things, Sting's song, I Hope the Russians Love Their Children Too, and I had to ask my mum to explain what the lyric meant to me when I was a kid. And then there's a section in Grant Morrison and all the artists that worked on it, his graphic novel series, The Invisibles, their graphic novel series, The Invisibles. And Oppenheimer turns up in that as well. And that's where I first heard the quote, the famous quote. But I just loved it. And I thought, you know, essentially it's a trilogy of films. It's a coming of age, and then it becomes a heist film where you have to get the team together to make to get all the stuff to make the thing in a race against time. And then it's a courtroom drama, and it's all blended as one. I'm rapt that it finally won the elusive Oscar for Nolan. I think most of the people in the film that got Oscars deserve them. Watching Godzilla Minus One win over special effects is, I think that's great, I really enjoyed American Fiction, so I was glad to see Cord Jefferson win the best screenplay. But, I think there is a... I'm going to discuss Oppenheimer at another time. I'm going to dig right into it. I see that it's opening in Japan and there's getting some mixed reviews over there. One thing I will say is the choice to not show what happened to the bomb when it was dropped in Japan is a choice. Now, you might not like that choice, but it kind of annoys me because it's like saying... Oh yeah, I listen to the Beatles, and they have a song called "Roll Over Beethoven," and there's no classical music on it. It's the movie's called Oppenheimer. It's about the guy, and when you don't see things, it doesn't mean that there's no effect. Like the movie is permeated with the effect of this choice. And also, he is shown to be an incredibly flawed man. We're too binary in the way we approach things. Yes, he was brilliant. Yes, he was flawed. Yes, he had probably the right intentions when he thinks Nazi Germany is going to get the bomb before them. Yes, he is naive that he thinks that once they're out of the race, that everything will be fine. Like, it's a complicated film, and just because you enjoy it doesn't mean you shouldn't engage with it and understand the complications. Especially if you want to kind of... Like, if you don't like it, that's fine. But if to criticise it for not showing people, well, A, that's another hour, I think the most interesting article I read about it was by the LA writer Justin Chang, who said, okay, well then who are you going to show us? Are you going to show us really nice Japanese people going about their day and then they get incinerated? Well, then that's just shallow thinking, So then, okay, so not everyone is lovely. Okay, then so you show them as... having flaws, and you show them as having real issues, and maybe you show them as not being very nice. So does that mean that they deserved it? Like, it's a complication that is unnecessary when it's a story about the man who created the bomb. Now, if this inspires people to make films about that, then that's art, and that's a good and an inspired and a proper reaction to what they've witnessed. But it was like Spike Lee saying, I would have shown it, and it's like, yeah. And I think the worst part of Black Klansman is when he spells out the story right at the end. Like, I was really loving that film right until the end, when it's like, oh, by the way, I'm drawing parallels to Trump. It's like, no shit, Sherlock, I was fucking watching the film anyway. I'm still angry about Molly and Peggy. I loved Oppenheimer. Saw it heaps. Saw it on all different types of screens. It's my number one. Not a fucking shock. We'll dig into it properly. I'll do a whole episode on it for you, for the three people who give a shit. No, you guys are good. No. I'm just being surly. Okay. I'll do some shout-outs, actually. Let's finish on some shout-outs. I really loved the French crime comedy The Innocent, originally released in 2022, but I didn't get to see it until last year. It is just great, and it's about a man called Abel learns that his mother is about to marry a man in prison, and he freaks out, and with the help of his best friend he will do whatever it takes to protect her, but meeting his new stepfather may well offer him a new perspective. So I thought that was great. I really enjoyed Killers of the Flower Moon. I'll have to see that again. I didn't really know how to rate that. The night that I saw that film, I had just been told on my way into the city, I had just been told the news about Cal and had to prepare myself, that's Cal Wilson, and had to prepare myself to go in and say goodbye to her the next day. So I'd already organised to meet friends. I was really focused on the film. It was kind of a relief to have some friendship that night but not have to talk, and I don't really I'll have to watch the film again because I don't really know where I sit with it totally. So yeah, that's why that just doesn't appear in the top 10. It's floating around in its own world. It needs a reappraisal for me to be in a better state of mind. All Quiet on the Western Front, which I watched on Netflix. Woo, what a soundtrack. That was well done. Megan, I really enjoyed it just to see Ronnie Chang get murdered. He's such a shithead in the film. It was great. To Adelaide Films, Monolith and Talk To Me were fantastic. A big shout out to those guys. They were great. And Pearl. I really enjoyed Pearl as well. So they were my shout outs. No order. They were just movies I really enjoyed and thought about a lot after watching them. And let's just do a countdown to sum up. The top 10 were coming in at number 10, John Wick Chapter 4, number 9, Babylon, number 8, Asteroid City, number 7, Godzilla Minus One, number 6, The Killer, number 5, Barbie, 4, Past Lives, 3, Tar, 2, After Sun, and just like a countdown to pressing a button, number 1, Oppenheimer. So there you go. We've done it. I finally did it. I finally got around to talking about the films. You know, I enjoyed Creed 3 when I saw it. Not really much to say there. What other films were out? Triangle of Sadness was fine. I thought that was fine. Thought that was a bit overblown for my taking, but I still enjoyed it. Cocaine Bear wasn't quite as funny as it could have been. I felt like that could have been just a little bit funnier, don't you think? I don't know when Barbarian was released, but I saw that. I really enjoyed that. I should have looked that up. I think that was 2022. Other films that I saw, Bringing Out the Dead, a Scorsese film, actually, from 1999. Not many people that I know have seen that. And if you haven't seen it, I reckon it's fantastic. So go and check that out. Bringing Out the Dead, Nicolas Cage playing playing an ambulance driver. Really good. Beau Is Afraid was funny at times. I was in a cinema where nobody was laughing, and I wonder if that kind of affected my enjoyment of it, which is interesting, isn't it? Like, no one was laughing. It was really bombing in the cinema. So, but I was still enjoying it. I saw Air, which I hated. There you go. There's one that I did not enjoy. I saw the Ziggy Stardust concert. I've seen that many times, but the re-release of that. I went back to some classics that I love, like Somewhere. I love Somewhere. In the Mood for Love. Some of you went and saw it in Adelaide and weren't too into it. But turns out There's a lot of you out there that aren't really into my weirder taste in movies, and I totally get that. But I'd put that in my top 10. That has crept into my top 10 of all time in The Mood for Love. I think about that movie all the time, and I think about that music all the time as well. The Exorcist, Believer, awful. The Creator, so much promise, didn't quite get there for me. I went back and watched Barton Fink. That's still great. But yeah, lots of movies last year, and I had a really good time. So there you go. There you go. That's the favourite movies of 2023. And we'll hopefully do it again a bit earlier in 2025 for 2024. But let's not get too ahead of ourselves. Am I right? Am I right? I should tell you the books I read. We'll do that another time. All right. Hey, thank you for listening. Thanks for checking in with me. If you're listening to this over Easter, I hope you're having a fun Easter. I will be at the Comedy Store next Thursday to Saturday. That's the 4th to the 6th of April. Oh, and you know what? For those of you in North Queensland, I am doing the Melbourne Comedy Festival Roadshow. Yes, I am. So let me tell you where I'm going to be. Rockhampton on the 23rd of April. Then Townsville on the 26th. Cairns on the 27th. Innisfail on the 28th. On the 30th, I'll be in Ingham. And then I think I'm in Mackay on the 3rd. Gladstone on the 4th. Bundaberg, on the 6th. I should have worked this out before I looked, before I started reading them out, because I've just got small notes here. Noosa, the 7th. Ipswich on the 9th. Anyway, you know what? Look up the Melbourne Comedy Festival Roadshow details in North of Queensland, and I'm on it, and I'm going to be, first time I've been doing it in 10 years with a bunch of fun comedians, and I'm looking forward to coming up for the first time in a long time and performing for you. So if you're around, please say hello, and if you're in Adelaide, we'll mention something soon, so keep an ear out for that. All right, I'm going to get going. Hope you're well. If you want blogs, head over to bigsquidpod.com. Most of them are pretty upbeat. That fucking Peggy and Molly one, maybe not so. All right, take care. Until then.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.